substance equals spurn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1 of 200, where we try to fit everything into an hour or less from an increasingly extended week of events, both international and domestic. It's me, the guy who always does this. I'm joined by co-hosts Finlay. How are you doing, Finlay?
Kia ora, I am doing all right.
That's fantastic. And, yeah. You know, like, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm also joined by Lamia. How are you doing, Lamia?
Morena, I'm good. How are you?
I am alive. Nice. So that's great.
That's fantastic.
As I said, too much stuff. Too much stuff is happening, and it's flowing through us like a horrible river. There's been stuff happening all over the world, but we'll start with Gaza, as we often do, because no one in New Zealand is covering it still is not being covered effectively here, except to republish Reuters and AP copy, which, as many people know, goes through the IDF, essentially, before being allowed out into the world. The US has started aid dropping tiny amounts of food as a PR stunt into Gaza because Israel continues to block aid against the ICJ provisional rulings, including holding bouncy castles and raves in front of the gates into Gaza to block those aid trucks. Really horrible stuff. The other thing the US is now planning to do is set up a port in Gaza so it can the heaviest air quotes you have ever experienced, have a base to get aid into Gaza from. Yes, I absolutely believe that is the reason why the US wants to set up its own infrastructure within Gaza. Very clever little piece of sleight of hand there, US Army, I guess, US Navy. You are fucking kidding. The ICJ deadline passed sometime in the last couple of weeks, last week actually, and South Africa was sent by Israel their list of things they're doing to meet the provisional measures. Clearly they haven't. Clearly, if this was a plausible genocide as established by the ICJ in the original set of rulings, I struggle to believe that they can't come to any conclusion now than that this is a genocide, because everything that they said that Israel should stop doing, they did harder and faster. And worse, we now have no idea what the numbers of deaths are on the ground because there's no infrastructure left. But even the numbers that we have are horrific. I don't know what's going to happen. And that's really bad. And it's even worse for Palestinians in Gaza and for other people in the region who are having to deal with this increasingly, I say increasingly, knowing that it started off pretty fascist, the Israeli state. But it's getting worse. They're getting more and more comfortable going on Israeli news channels and just saying, we're going to kill you all. You know, this is a regular occurrence if you're following Israeli media at all. And yet they're continuing to try and peddle in the West among media agencies and from the top, from the local politicians in whichever Western country you are, to just run out these absurd lines about how Israel has the right to self-defense and the like, which they know, they absolutely know at this stage are lies, and only there is a justification so that they can continue to hold on to some semblance of anything, really. That's the Gaza update. Anything to add that either of you have seen?
I just have two things, maybe more than two, but let's start with two.
Get in.
The first is your comment on New Zealand media and how they're copy-pasting Reuters and AP. I just wish they would just report the utter terrifying things that Israeli ministers are saying, verbatim. Just report that. That does not have to go through anything. They're doing it publicly, you know, on Twitter, on various social media mediums. They're saying it out loud. Just quote them. And that would just illustrate how terrifying of a nation state the state of Israel is, right? Like, you don't have to go on the ground on Gaza to report on what's happening there. Don't have to do that, right? Like, just report what is publicly available information. I'd love to see a 6 p.m. lead, which is not going to exist anymore, but I'd love to see a 6 p.m. lead on, you know, the terrifying things Israeli ministers say on a day-to-day basis about how they want to kill every Palestinian. So that's first thing. I don't know why the New Zealand media cannot do that or won't do that. I see a lot of people defending their stance by saying this is sort of how things work. This is sort of the rules of engagement and all that kind of stuff. And it's really confusing to me how, if you are an individual reporter, how you can accept this as rules of engagement. Like, why would you have gone to journalism schools? Because I know individual reporters are way more altruistic than that. So anywho, so that's my first point. Just report things that are already publicly available to inform us a little bit more, right? Because I'd like to have like a, you know, TVNZ, News Hub, RNZ link that I could be like, you know, every day I go on Instagram and I am flooded with horrifying pictures of babies dying. And then I'll go on RNZ to see a report on that because I'd like to share that graphic on Instagram, because I specifically say Instagram because too many of my friends are still posting about what clothes they've bought and what shoes they've bought and where they've eaten. And that obviously includes myself as well. I'm not exempt from this horrifyingness, but I'd like to like at least layer in some, hey, here's what's happening. And I cannot do that because it's just those graphics don't exist from our, you know, mainstream reputable media sources. So that's one. The second thing, I think you covered everything beautifully. I just want to add the tweet from Kamala Harris about how she's calling for a 6-week ceasefire or something similar to that, you know? And it's sort of like, you shouldn't be calling for anything. You can just pick up the phone and make it happen. Like, you just need to make a call. You should not be on Twitter. You should not, there needs to be no speeches. You are the vice president of the United States of America who is selling arms at an alarming level to Israel. All you have to do is stop arming them and the ceasefire just happens automatically. You have that power. And this is a conversation that I've had with friends and family who are United States citizens and can vote, and why they should not vote for Joe Biden, which in 2020, my position was firmly that you have to vote for Joe Biden and you cannot let Trump win. And I really don't care about Trump anymore because everybody has to have a red line, and the red line has to be genocide. And
at least, you
know, at least. And I think my point is that, and the idea that like, well, Trump will let this happen as well, it still doesn't change the fact that someone is already actively letting this happen, right? And that makes you realize why, and I've said this before, why the United States government doesn't have a red line with Israel, because the people of America don't have a red line with the Democrats. If Democratic voters were saying our red line is genocide, then that would translate. And so these are the two things that like sort of preoccupy my mind is, one, I don't feel like you have to be on the ground to report accurately. And to that point, I feel like the death toll has been sitting at 30,000 for a really long time. And we all know that cannot be accurate because all the journalists in Gaza just don't exist anymore to report on it accurately. And they cannot collate because they don't have the resources to collate those data. So that's one thing. But you don't have to be on the ground. I think you should just report what's already publicly available from the Israeli government. And that paints a pretty good picture of what's happening on the ground. And two, I do believe the United States needs to be punished because they are the chief instigator of this war. And this might get me a lot of hate, but I when people come to me and say, well, this will make, you know, women suffer, minorities suffer in America, I think that I don't care at this point. I think that we deserve suffering. And I would say that if it was happening here in New Zealand, I do think that our prime minister should have a stronger voice. And if that means that we suffer, fine. I don't feel like I deserve happiness while this is happening. And I will just add that, you know, in the last 6 months, I've had a baby. And while feeding my baby, I've had to watch starving babies. And it's not been an enjoyable experience for me. And I'm like, well, I don't deserve the joy of enjoying my child when other mothers are going through this. I actually don't. And like, and so that's going to be my final point, is that we all deserve to suffer if Gazans are suffering.
I think it's also like, let's talk about what is happening now under Biden, right? With minorities and like generally marginalized people in America, right? Like Biden isn't doing anything to stop any of the horrific things that are happening. He's decided to go for this bipartisan kind of horrific immigration and like border policies. And, you know, it is every day it is getting more and more dangerous to be, particularly to be trans in America, to be queer in America, to be a woman in America, to be black or to be a person of color. Like everything is getting worse anyway. And I don't think we should pretend that Biden being in there is like, oh, but this is good. This is fine. You know, like it's not like it's going from like a good thing or even like an okay thing. Like I think we need to be pretty open that America is sliding into fascism under Biden. And that kind of needs to be addressed. And I don't think just voting for Biden because Trump will be worse, Trump may be worse. Really, I don't know. I think it's incoherent. Like, you're choosing between two fascists at this stage. I don't, personally, don't think it's worth voting for either.
Can I just add to your point, the whole idea that Trump will be worse? Like, he's worse because the system allows him. You've created a system which allows him to be worse. Like, why yeah. don't you have better checks and balances that Trump can't yeah. do the stuff he's doing? And same goes for Biden, obviously. But it's like, it's Biden went to the State of the Union address last night and said that he was going to codify Roe v. Wade. You've had 3 years yeah. to codify Roe v. Wade, right? And you didn't. So why do you keep playing this game with us? Like, we don't know what's happening. Why we don't remember 2016 and 2020 and 2012. Like, you've been in power in our lifetimes, in the millennial lifetime, right? And so, yeah, it's really frustrating when they say, like, Trump is not the reason why America is sliding into fascism. No. American politics is the reason why America is sliding into fascism. Their system of government is designed to let them slide into fascism. Yeah. And they won't admit it or agree with that. And it's really frustrating.
Well, lots to look forward to in the future in the United States, apparently. It's a bad time. I don't have anything really further to add on that point. We should do a big US episode at some point because the election's coming up and all of that as well. But we'll leave that for now. The other...
what is the election year over there?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. All right. Cool. That'll be fun.
We're talking about the way that New Zealand media had covered the genocide in Gaza. And in the last couple of weeks, we've had two major announcements out of the two main TV newsrooms. We talked about News Hub last week. They are closing shop in June this year, unless, you know, a savior comes along and bails it all out somehow, you know, which may happen. Rupert Murdoch's just across the channel. He could sweep in here and pick that newsroom up. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? And then this week, we talked about it a bit in our midweek episode with David Farrier. TVNZ announced funding cuts. But since then, since that episode, we've found that they decided to aim their cuts almost entirely at investigative journalism. Some of the biggest properties and most audience-focused shows that they have, Sunday and Fair Go, are the two big ones. In a world where, you know, we're already struggling to get a decent news diet out of our news media, this just seems... I don't really have words for it anymore. You know, there are going to be all kinds of claims made about why they had to do it this way and yada yada. But these are like 20-year-old shows. They're some of the biggest shows on TV, Sunday in particular. It's what pulls people, the audiences, to their television channel. It's just underlining for me again and again how absolutely visionless and defunct media leadership is. The people running these organizations have seen this coming down the pipeline for a decade. And their answer is not to take pay cuts themselves, not to look at the management structure and try and make cuts that won't destroy their product, is to cut like some of the sharpest content that they have. We're heading into a period where media companies aren't doing news, is the only conclusion to this. And the people making those decisions are on the line for it, in my opinion.
I think what I want to add to your where they could make cuts is I actually think that they could invest more money. And this is me putting my marketing hat on and giving you a little example. A few months ago, maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, John Campbell did this thing on Uber and how Uber were rewarding their drivers, and he tweeted about it. And, you know, I immediately on that day, you know, watched live TV because I really wanted to watch that segment because I'm also really angry about Uber and Airbnb and all these platforms. So I really wanted to see this little thing that he did. And that's the last time I watched live TV, right? But he did a bit on Twitter. I happened to see it. I went and watched it live on real TV, not afterwards. I have never seen any marketing for Sunday, Fairgo, any of this. Like, I know they do some, but I know they've also pulled back on Twitter for good reasons. But I haven't seen clips on TikTok. I haven't come across anything anywhere. And I think they actually need to invest in marketing and realize how the new generation of people, and it's not just anyone post-boomer, like Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, even Gen Alpha, how we're consuming content. And they have not kept up. They're still using traditional forms of marketing. And they really need to invest money in marketing, because I do think that those things are important for democracy and those things are important, but I don't think that the average person knows that they should be consuming it. And isn't that the whole point of marketing? Like, you don't know you're supposed to have Pop-Tart for breakfast, but you do it because you see a million ads on TV. Sorry, that's a very American reference. I apologize for that, but you get my point, right? Like, the whole point of marketing is to convince you to consume something that you didn't think you needed to. And if a million influencers on TikTok can convince you to try Korean skincare, I don't understand why we don't have marketing for this kind of new stuff. This is where I think the execs have failed, and they should get their pay cut because they didn't hit their KPIs, right? Like, and this is me doing all of my marketing and corporate speak in like one little segment, but I actually think that they need to invest more money promoting, which they haven't done. I do think there's an appetite for it. You can create an appetite for anything, in my opinion. So they just failed at their jobs.
And once again, it's workers that are taking the hit.
Yeah. And you know, these journalists, I don't know how much they get paid, but I can't imagine they're getting paid like millions of dollars in New Zealand. They're not. And so I do feel for people who lose their pay, because I myself have watched people, I've lived through many, many rounds of layoffs because I work in tech, and it's a horrifying experience. Every 6 months I go through my finances because I'm terrified of losing my job, and I know it's really horrible, and they're failing their workers and they're failing the public. And I think that at my job, you know, I work in marketing, so I'm being measured on how good I am at marketing. And I think that the TVNZ and News Hub are really bad at marketing. And, you know, I don't understand why no one is pointing this out. Like, you're bad at getting people to consume your content. That is your job.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's not something that I'd really considered. They don't really kind of pull people to say, hey, you should really be watching this. This is important. Yeah.
Yeah, they've lent on the fact that there aren't many options, right? There's less now. Good work, everybody involved with making decisions in the industry, and great work to all our parliamentarians who have just failed to help build a framework where independent or publicly funded, which can still be independent, mind you, media can flourish. But I think some of the statements from, or lack of statements from, for example, the broadcasting minister, who is like running scared from what it seems, from our MPs, are really indicative of how people in power feel about these organizations. They don't give a shit. They're glad. And alongside that, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are not sorry to see media take some big hits. There's this real, and I don't know how measurable this is against like the news stuff as opposed to opinion and comment, but there's been dropping trust and I guess dropping brand loyalty to these organizations for a long time. And that's to do with the way they present news and content as well. So there are far less people out here willing to go into bat for them than there could have been.
Yeah, and it's not like people are not consuming news. They're just going to other, you know, places and other unsavory places to get their news, right? It's not like people are not hungry for news. People do want to know what's happening, right? And I'll give you another personal example, and that is I'm a deeply COVID conscious person, and I'm trying to avoid repeat infection for many reasons. You know, I have underlying health conditions. I have a baby. So those are my reasons, right? And I consume a lot of COVID cautious content. And once in a while, I'll see someone say something really batshit crazy, right, on Twitter about COVID that actually, you know, strengthens my position on it, right? But it's batshit crazy. And I think, I want to consume this content because it like kind of reinforces my point of view. So I'll go Google it I'll try to like verify it. And it's so weird that I will find actual reputable news articles confirming that. It'll be like Business Insider, RNZ. I've seen it. And I was like, how is it that this was on RNZ and I missed it as someone who is hyper-focused on COVID? And the thing is that somebody did file an article on this topic on either long-term damage or the fact that COVID was in wastewater before January 2020, which I found out this year. And RNZ covered it. And then there's no follow-up, right? And the thing is that they covered it because they had to or for whatever reason, but there's no promotion of it. I didn't see it. If I didn't see it, then definitely many, many people didn't see it, right? So then I see on Twitter where someone will decry and say, well, the mainstream media isn't covering something. And then someone will be like, here are all the links where they've covered everything. It's like, well, okay, technically they've covered it, but I didn't see it. It wasn't rammed down my throat and I need this to be rammed down my throat. And my secondary example for this is the 2011 New Zealand election, which was when I was working for Labour in opposition. And the entire Labour campaign was about asset sales. They made their campaign about Nationals going to come into government. They're going to sell our assets. Asset sale was the big thing. I woke up at 6 a.m. and went to work every single day. Asset sales was our thing. The election is over. Labour loses. We're all in the leader's office. And they do letters that people write in. They would sometimes read some of the letters that people write in. And this woman wrote in a letter, said, hey, you guys, I just found out that National is planning on selling assets. Are you guys going to do anything about it? And the entire leader's office, you know, we just sat there stunned, like for the last 6 weeks, this is all we've talked about. How did this person not know? Well, this person did not know. Because you have to continuously reinforce messages. They have to be in every channel. You have to take advantage of everything. And I think that our news media is just not doing that. They're passive. And they come out and they say, well, people aren't watching Sunday anymore. People aren't watching, you know, Fairgo or whatever. And it's like, whose fault is that? It's like people no longer watch the 6 p.m. news. Why not? Why aren't people watching the 6 p.m. news? What are you doing at 6 p.m.?
And they'll blame the audiences as well and say, oh, but it doesn't get the clicks, you know, so we have to do increasingly like wild headlines and cover all this reality TV stuff and like put this all on the front page because that gets the clicks and it draws people in. And no, look, yes, your number goes up. Well done. But it's not building an environment in which people are steadily and increasingly consuming news.
Like, yeah, I'm just trying to imagine the CMO of Apple going to the CEO and saying, oh, people are just not buying iWatches anymore. What can I do? People just don't want a giant glob watch on their wrists anymore. Not much I can do. Like you gotta be, you know, creative. You gotta figure out a way to get them to buy those iWatches. Like, I'm sorry. It's just not, to me, it's not acceptable. And maybe I need to take my giant marketing hat off, but it's just not acceptable to say people are just not consuming this news when the whole point is to get them to consume this news. Like, you cannot call yourself the fourth estate if you cannot behave like the fourth estate.
And moving on from that, we're talking a lot about funding and cuts. Obviously, the media is facing a lot of that currently. Questions around public funding for TVNZ as well, obviously, as a public entity. David Seymour has been very happy to be a bit of a little shit about that, especially considering the amount of free media that these companies have lavished him with for a decade. You know, he is one of the, if not, no, yeah, he is the standout benefactor of the way our media works as a politician. Like, it's absurd. Like, go and do a study, somebody, because it is absolutely wild how much free media David Seymour gets. And I don't care if he's a nice guy to talk to. He's not. And I don't care if, you know, his PR department is putting out lots of press releases. Just, you're not required to cover them. And you're not required to use his framing. It's very easy stuff. And now he's turned around and it's like, nah, fuck you guys. You get what you deserve. Fake, like doing kind of soft fake news. And, you know, when News Hub announced it was closing, it was like, oh, well, watch out TVNZ, they're coming for you next. Really nasty, nasty piece of work. And I hope everyone in media who helped to platform him and give him the soft treatment, I hope you feel really, really fucking bad, because this is how that kind of stuff turns around when you launder the right wing in this way, and especially a nasty piece of work like David Seymour. But this coalition government is kind of treating that effect as the entirety of their policy platform, i.e. we are going to cut a whole bunch of stuff that people need, and we're going to crow about it, we're going to brag about it, and we're going to dissemble about it. And everyone else is going to have to deal with it. And by and large, we are just going to have to deal with it, because there's no way to stop them legislatively or parliamentarily. It's, yeah, the list is huge. And I guess just quickly bouncing back to the way it's being covered as well, our media are just saying, oh, look, they're meeting their 100-day plan. Well done. Even Newsroom, who is meant to be like one of the more investigative journalistic outlets, this morning, they posted their assessment, their analysis of the 100-day plan, and gave it all star ratings. And guess what? It came in above average, because all they're analyzing is, did they do the thing they said they were going to do? Did they do the horrible thing that they said they're going to do? Oh, yeah, they kind of did it. 3 stars. That's not analysis, folks. Like, if we're at the point where whether or not a political party is doing a good job is whether or not they execute on the increasingly fascist shit that they're doing, like, you shouldn't exist. Your coverage is worthless at that point. I don't know. I've seen multiple articles in that vein as well, and some of them far more congratulatory of the National Coalition. What are your favorite cuts so far, Lamia? What are your favorite things that they've cut?
I think the transport stuff is so glaring to me, where, you know, there's two things. One, we have a cost of living crisis. Two, we have a climate change crisis. And this thing just basically makes it worse on both levels, right? Like, cutting free transport for children, partial transport for under 25, public transport for under 25s, making it harder to purchase electric vehicles. All of those things means that the climate is going to get worse, because fewer people will be taking public transport. And then on top of that, all of those things make your life more expensive. And they're trying to make it up with a measly tax cut, which before the election, it was found out to be stupid and non-existent. And the media knew they fucked up, for lack of a better word. And then after the election, they're still sort of pretending like, as long as National can get through their horrendous tax cuts, they have won and they're succeeding. And the reason why we can't have any analysis is because any analysis of a National Party policy that shows that it's worse for people immediately means it's a Labour Party talking point and or you are left-wing media. And the media have not figured out how to get themselves out of that little pretzel, right? They have not come up with the messaging to get themselves out of that pretzel, because that is their job. y'all are the writers and the thinkers. Like, come up with a way to present this information that doesn't immediately make people go that you're a Labour Party shill. And the reason they cannot get themselves out of the pretzel is because the only way they can present information is National said this, Labour said this, right? They cannot seem to get a policy person to say, if you do this, this will happen. You decide if you want this thing to happen. That's all they need to do. Again, I'm going to go back to the Israeli thing. Just report the thing that is happening. What will happen if we don't have free lunches in school? What will happen if you get rid of period products in school? Just say the thing. You don't have to say, Labour said this is what's going to happen. Just say what's going to happen and let people make their own minds about if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But for some reason, they just cannot get out of this like party politics. And I know I'm making this hand gesture that no one can see, but they just, you know, it's like this or that. And when it's really just here's an impact, right? And, you know, I think partially it's because everything is so partisan politicized. And not just politicized, because everything is political, but we always have to couch everything in terms of the party. And I think, I don't know why is this not being, I didn't go to journalism school, so I don't know. Is this not being taught in schools, or is it a case of, you know, we live in a society where the media organizations are a business and it's not in the business interest to do it by the owners who are, you know, for lack of a better word, capitalists, and it's in their interest for right-wing governments to be in place. Maybe that is it. And that sounds conspiratorial, but I'd like an answer. Like, this is a good business decision for us. Not very obvious, because your business is closing down. So that's not the point. So why are you not doing that? And I don't have an answer for it apart from the fact that that's what's happening. We are worse off and no one can say those words. We will be worse off, right, because of these policies, and no one can say those words. And also to go back to that point about the free media that David Seymour is getting, this is exactly the same as the free media that Trump got in 2016. $1 billion or more worth of free media that Trump got. Then Jake Tapper went on CNN and various people went on CNN in 2020 and was like, we made a mistake. We are never going to do that ever again. And they're doing it again right now. And I think one of the MSNBC hosts went on one of the late night shows and basically said, like, oh, we swung too much on not covering Trump. We need to cover Trump so people will see how bad he is. And that's exactly the sort of view. Like, if you just present David Seymour on the screen without any analysis, any impact analysis, that people will just figure it out. No, you need to tell. If we implement ACT policies, this is what's going to happen. If we say we're going to bring back firearms that we banned after 15 March, this is what's going to happen, right? Like, but they don't say that. They don't say why we did those things. And so that's the thing that I think is really problematic. And so people are left with this idea that you're going to get this ginormous tax cut, and it doesn't matter if you have to pay for your kid's bus to travel around. And I think it does matter, and no one has the maths in their hand. I talked to one person who said, you know, the tax cut is not going to cover the 20 hours free ECE I was going to get from when my child was 2 years old. How many people have a kid under 3 going into ECE next year who are not going to get that? And how much tax cuts are they getting? That's a simple math. Like, Stats New Zealand has so much data. All you have to do is figure out the age of the children, how much money they're saving, how much money they're losing. It's like freaking arithmetic. Like, do it. No one will do it. And then you have people like randos on Twitter doing it. And then they say, well, you know, Twitter journalists who are not real journalists, they don't know what they're talking about. Like, someone needs to do that, because people need that information. And they don't even think CTU is real. Like, they will not, like, it's incredibly frustrating that we can't make decisions based on data, which is supposed to be apolitical. We can't even do that, because they just will not do the data analysis. And then they turn around and say, no one wants to listen to our news. Well, you're not giving people anything material that they can do anything with. So that's my rant. I apologize for taking up so much time.
Good. Rant more. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, even, you know, you mentioned the CTU, they came out with the tax breakdown in the campaign last year, and a whole bunch of political journalists turned around and said, oh, shame on the electorate for being hoodwinked by National. They should have done their own research.
That and we did. Like, we were doing the hoodwinking for National.
Yeah, just absurd. And yeah, not looking good in those slots. Finlay, do you have any favorite cuts?
I think it's like fun and cool that we have, you know, I guess we have more than, but we've got two big islands and really old shitty ferries that don't work very well. And we started getting rid of the ferry terminal to put in a new one so that if you needed goods in Tuapunamu in the South Island, you could get them. But we're not doing that anymore. So I think that, the ferries go down quite a lot. That's probably going to keep happening. And yeah, there's not really a solution for that. There's lots of things we can't fly down. So I guess, I don't know. Who needs effective transport between two major islands? I guess not us.
Or anywhere, it seems. The kind of broader, like rather than just funding cuts, the broader cuts to plans for infrastructure are going to be, like the cost of inaction on the stuff is going to be extreme. Like hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's not an exaggeration. Because we're talking about 100 years into the future.
It's all so that they can give tax cuts to landlords because real estate companies donated heavily to them.
I see. It actually makes sense now. All right. I guess we have to get rid of everything that the people in those houses would use. Yeah, I feel like it's a kind of set of policies that should have everyone just banging down the doors of these MPs. And in the media, I want to be clear, I'm not calling for a mob just yet. And just saying, what are you doing? What the hell is this? What is this going to do? To be fair, they're trying to do that with some MPs, and those MPs are just refusing to show up now because they know that they don't have to.
But there's also this view that they were duly elected, so then they can do whatever they can because they were elected, right? And
didn't apply to Labour, though, did it? Who had an absolute majority but weren't allowed to do anything.
Exactly. That was exactly going to be my point, right? So Labour were also elected when they brought in all these policies, right? The free lunches, the sanitary products in school for people who have periods, not to mention fair pay agreements, right? That's a big one. These were all of these things that Labour did with their super majority doesn't count, but all the things that National are doing with their shambolic coalition does count. And no, again, so somebody needs to do some analysis of why that's not that. Right. And also, I think that if you are going to do things because you were elected, but you didn't campaign on it, I think that should be pointed out. You did not campaign on this. So then people didn't really elect you on that. That's just really bad faith. Again, we need an arbiter to say that. It can't be.
You see,
me.
It was number 15. It was point number 15 on either New Zealand First or ACT's policy thing that they did campaign on somewhere once. And so it's also okay because that's just how coalitions work.
And the fact that Christopher Luxon backed down on every single point and just like wholesale adopted New Zealand First policies is not something they campaigned on. Like he was asked many, 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 many times, are you going to work with Winston Peters? He pretended like he was not going to, even though it was an electoral surety. And then he didn't say, I'm going to wholesale adopt ACT and New Zealand First policies into mine. He never said that. And, you know, all the 30-whatever% people that voted for National should be up in arms, but for some bizarre reasons, they're not. And the bizarre reason is they don't know this is what's happening. And I don't want to be the person that sits here and criticizes the media all day, every day, constantly berating them for not doing their jobs, you know, because they're doing something somewhere. They must be doing something with, you know, their time. But my point is that I think we do need a shift in how we approach these. And it cannot constantly be seen as a left-wing thing to approach it differently. It needs to be seen as an independent thing. That's my problem. And anytime you criticize any government, it's just seen as a left-wing thing. Even when Labour was being criticized, it was like the, you know, progressives are criticizing Labour. Right? Like it just never is that their policies are just bad and they have bad impacts. And the thing is that I say this because I've spent most 90% of my academic life in policy. And there are people out there who study the effects of these policies, right? Like, I know we're probably going to switch to boot camps at some point, maybe if we have time. But, you know, I did criminal justice policies. I looked at youth criminality and I went to youth prisons in America. And we know the results of what happens if you imprison people, put them in boot camps. Like, these exist already. It's sort of like drug testing beneficiaries. The data exists already. They do it in various different places. They did it in Florida. They did it in America. You can sort of see the impact. And you can say, hey, it doesn't work. Let's not do it. But for some reason, you're not allowed to say that. And I want to know why. I want to know why. If you take a piece of policy and academics look at it, they study it, there's data on it, and it doesn't work, why can't you just say it doesn't work?
And this is a constant thing with right-wing governments here, right? And their kind of pet populist policies is often they've been tried in the United States or the UK, are the main two somehow, for some unknown reason, where they were tried decades ago, and they've fallen over, they've failed. With a couple of laws coming in soon, they've failed here, sometimes more than once.
And I just want to point that the opposite has been successful in places like Finland and Norway, and they never look at that.
No, too hard, too hard. My favorite cut is to school infrastructure. That one's really great because all the buildings are rotting, and I would like the children of New Zealand to be breathing in black mold. Thanks, National. But so many of these things, you know, seem to be targeting children and the next generation of New Zealanders. And then, as you mentioned, Lamia, they're bringing back this boot camps policy. Finlay, do you want to kind of take us through exactly why and what is happening there, if possible?
As in what their plan is. I guess we've known they've been campaigning on this, I think, for several years. They want to create military boot camps, essentially, run by NZDF and I think Orangan Tamariki, to help with, they want to call them serious young offenders, which essentially is forcing young people, mostly young Māori, who are going to be much more likely to be. So, yeah, they want to create military camps for young offenders, or serious and repeated young offenders. It's something that, as you mentioned before, has been tried here before, has been tried here for multiple times and for decades. And we know pretty definitively that it will have, at best, no impact on preventing young people from further offending or harming other people, and at worst will essentially result in more widespread child abuse in state care. It will, you know, torture and traumatize and abuse young people, particularly young Māori, and they will come out, as pretty much everybody does from that situation, much more likely to hurt themselves and much more likely to hurt other people. There is a, not going to remember the particular acronym, but there is a voluntary kind of service thing that is currently run by the NZDF, where young people can, if they choose, do some sort of basic training for 6 weeks. And there have been some, I guess, positive stories coming out of that, but someone choosing to do that is quite different to someone being forced into, you know, taken out of the community and forced into, you know, a military camp at age 15 for a whole year. That's a very long time. And yeah, kids have been abused in these before. Kids will be abused in them again, because that's what happens, right? That's with the abuse state care inquiry, you know, tens if not hundreds of thousands of people have been abused in state care. And, you know, Tracy McIntosh talks about the state being like the worst recidivist offender. And it is, right? Like, there's no, if we were to treat the state as a parent, there would be no way that we would be doing things like this, right? That we would say, oh, okay, you've abused tens of thousands of people before. Why don't we give you a whole lot more of vulnerable young people? Because we have told a whole bunch of lies about youth crime spiraling out of control. And yeah, all of the cuts are going to make things worse for people, young people who are struggling. And so, yeah, they're going to do more desperate things because that is what people do when desperate people do desperate things. And there's a whole lot of failures in health and education and in the way that our society is structured that creates these problems. And I guess the response that National, Enact and NZ First have decided is one that is going to, yeah, let's just make it all worse for everybody involved.
We kind of have to ask, though, why is it that whenever these issues come up, this plays so well with the populace? Like, it does, this whole punishing children for some reason plays really well, even though we know it doesn't work. And I think the way it's always framed in the media is that this is going to land well with everyone, right? And never, why is it landing well with everyone? And that there is this whole thing of like punishing people for their circumstances that exists in our society. And I kind of don't really understand that. And you see this with like youth offending, you see this with our approach to drugs and how we do that, the criminalization of drug intake when it's a health problem. I had my in-laws from Texas last week here in New Zealand, and they're extremely conservative. And I got into multiple arguments, but one of the arguments I got into was about teachers' pay. And my mother-in-law was a teacher her whole life. She taught primary school. And I was arguing for better pay for teachers, and she was against it. I thought I was going to get in her good books, you know, because I was vehemently arguing for teachers getting paid more because she did not get paid enough, right? And her point was, there are a lot of bad teachers. And so you would rather punish yourself just so the bad teachers might not get a 5K increase in their salary.
That's a very interesting way to think about it.
And it's so interesting, that point of view. It's sort of like, you know, if I gave you 50K, but your worst enemy got 100K, would you take the 50K? And it's like, well, how, it really tells you something about the person and how they answer that question. And if you say that I don't want that 50K because I don't want my enemy to get 100K, I want to know what makes you think that way. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't. And I think there's a really good podcast on like how conservatives and progressives think and how their brain thinks differently. And it's the Hidden Brain podcast. Anyway, so there's half of the population does think differently. And when I was sitting there making this argument, I thought she was going to be like, oh, yes, we should pay teachers more. You're such a good daughter-in-law. Instead, I got like, nah, bad teachers, they don't deserve any pay. I don't care if I got paid 50K a year, you know, until I retired. They don't deserve pay. And I think some of it, again, I'm going to go back to that initial point of like what makes us decide we want a Pop-Tart in the morning. Some of it is engineered. I do think we've been engineered to be selfish. I don't think we are inherently selfish people. I think years and years of, in my mother-in-law's case, maybe Fox News or other news, even CNN is just as bad. Those kind of news agencies and how they frame things, I think it makes you desire certain things. And I do think that there's the fundamental failure in our society has been how we've been engineered to desire certain things and not others. Primarily, I will point to the fact that in the last 20 to 30 years, we've had a huge increase in billionaires, and it is in their best interest to make us not desire equality, equity, and better, you know, living standards for us plebs. It is in their interest. They cannot be billionaires if we all have good lives, right? And a lot of the funding of these organizations and academic journal articles and all of the funding comes from them. And this is going to sound conspiratorial, but it's really not. Like, they pay for it, so you get a certain point of view. Like, and then there are people who say, yeah, you know, they got rich, they get to do that. And I think we need a shift in society that says, no, Like, no.
They got rich. They get the gallows. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And so much of getting rich is luck, and people don't realize that. Like, people think these people are savants and they made their billions, and they did not. They did not. It's off the back of our labor, mostly, and engineering of the stock market, right? And so this, I do think there's a connection between who's funding this stuff. And you were saying, like, oh, maybe someone will come and bail these people out. Like, if the wrong person bails them out, we are screwed still.
Or maybe right? worse, right?
Or worse. And so I do think that we have to talk about marketing and how capitalism has been marketed really well to our demise, just like Pop-Tarts to our cholesterol. So I think we just really need to figure out how we start thinking differently and how we have to sort of change the conversation so people start thinking differently. And the reason why I keep coming up on this podcast is I think that maybe somebody will listen and say, hey, maybe we shouldn't think that way. That's my hope anyway.
It's interesting, right? It's a reality that you live every day, right? Like, you wake up, you have breakfast or not, you go to your job, do that, and you're interacting with that, and you have a very regular set of physical activities that you do. And then there's the framework for explaining reality. Why are things this way? And you don't, I mean, everyone has their internal reasons for thinking particular things, right? But you're not regularly constructing that as an individual. You're not regularly going, oh man, why am I in this particular kind of job? And why does this particular kind of job earn median wage or below median wage? And that's what the information space plays a role as. And the news media or the content media play a huge, huge part in that. And so if they're constantly kind of giving you ads for real estate and cars and saying, oh, both sides, as politics like sprints towards the far right, that gets incorporated into that framework about why your reality is the way it is, whether you want it to or not. So even as someone who's, my brain's really weird, so even though I'm critical about stuff, I just suck the stuff up like a sponge. If I ever like go off the deep end, I'll just start spouting all this horrific stuff because it's all on my brain. Like, all the stuff is there. All these talking points are there. Like, the most horrific far-right talking points are in my brain because I've consumed that media, and that's just the way my brain works. And it's taken a critical step for me to be like, okay, this is over here, and it's part of my analysis for how these media entities work. But it's still there. It's still hanging out there. It's still like...
Yeah, and
a part of that framework.
And it's sort of like you can take the same set of facts and think differently. And like, as an example, I went on parental leave for 6 months. 3 months of those parental leave was fully my paid salary from my work. It is not legally mandated for them to do that, but they do that as a policy. And I think that plus more should be for everyone, right? And someone might say to me, and I think to myself constantly, like, why did I get that? And why does the grocery store worker not get their full pay, or the barista not get their full pay? And a lot of people in society will be like, well, you know, you made these really good choices in life, and you work for this really good company that gave you that, you know, thing. And I sit here and I think back, and I think I got my job on a fluke, on a luck. I happened to be in Austin, Texas. My company is really big where I am at, and you can't not walk 2 feet without meeting someone who worked for my company. So then I got in because I knew somebody, right? Why was I in Texas? I decided to do a master's because I was going through a breakup and I was sad about being in Wellington and running into my ex constantly. That is the reason. It wasn't like I'm so smart and, you know, I made these like really good academic career choices. No, like, it was an emotional decision that has paid off for the last 8-9 years for me, right? And so I don't believe that I look at my circumstances and I think like, oh yeah, I deserve this because I worked hard for it. I did not work hard for it, right? Like, there's many, many, many lucky things that happened to me. Not to mention, it was not my company policy when I first started the job. It became a policy only like 4 or 5 years ago, right? And I have benefited immensely for it. But someone else in my position, if they were a billionaire, they would say, I made this happen. And it's like, you did not, right? And I, conversely, people don't make suffering happen for themselves. They don't choose homelessness. Youths are not going out there doing crimes because it's cool, no matter what people will tell you about TikTok. It's not why people are going there, right? Kids are not coming to school because they're working 40, 50 hours a week, right? To pay to live. That's ridiculous in a country of 5 million. It is, you are an incompetent government. And I don't care if you're Labor, National, Greens, I don't give a shit. You're an incompetent government if you can't make the lives of 5 million people better. Like, it's a tiny country. Your KPIs suck. You don't meet them. You are a failure and you should be booted out. And I feel like at some point in this podcast, y'all need to start talking about how we change this in 2026 and get better people in parliament. Because it's not acceptable for us to be running these people every 3 years, having terrible outcomes every 3 years. And then in one, you know, we get one shot to do some good and then it gets rolled back under urgency. Like, these are bad things. And somebody needs to be telling people these are bad things. Like, I want our brains re-engineered to think good, to be hopeful, to do good things for people, to be okay with a poor kid getting free lunch. Like, I want that to happen. Sorry, I was yelling. I'm not yelling at you guys.
No, look, yell away. Yell into the void. That's what our podcast is for, more than anything else. Yeah, I think there's this really weird flip side to meritocracy, right? Like, this myth that, oh, you do something really good, you work really hard, and you get the rewards of that. Oh, if bad things are happening for you, you've got anti-merit. You know, you're full of vice. And everything that happens to you, you deserve it. And I think it's stuff like that which lets policies like three strikes or like boot camps get implemented or run well with the public. And again, I'm not even really sure if that's the case or not at this point. But yeah, it's just a really defunct way of looking at things.
I mean, I can even see a parent who has a kid who will go through the system supporting this because they don't have support, mm-hmm. right? You know, if your kid is repeatedly offending and you don't know how to take care of your kid and the government says we're going to put him in a boot camp, you as a parent might be okay with it, right? And no one's going to tell you your kid's going to get abused in boot camp. They're not going to tell you that. You're going to think you're exempt from that. No one's going to tell you, like, go look at the pages and pages of documentation of state abuse of children, right? No one's going to tell you that. And you're so desperate for support that you might take that opportunity, right? You might be supportive of that opportunity. In these situations where they can't afford to house their kid, clothe their kid, feed their kid, don't have options, and they might take that options. No one is telling them, hey, instead of giving cuts to landlords who don't need it, we could up your benefits so you can feed your kids, right? And you don't have to go look for a job. You could be home when the kid comes home. Your kid maybe goes to school with proper shoes. They don't have to be embarrassed. We might have, I don't know, better air quality policy so the kids are not getting sick in schools constantly. Sorry, that's for a different discussion. But no one's saying that to parents that these are possibilities. These are things that we could have if we just had a very modest wealth tax, right? I want to end my rant with, there was a couple of days ago, there was a big billboard that Powerball was $12 million. And I turned to my husband and I was like, oh my God, what would we do if we had $12 million, right? Like, what would we do? And the conclusion was, I'd still have my job. My husband would definitely quit his job. And we'd still live in the same house, right? And we'd put all the money in like a term deposit. And I was doing the calculations out of like, what is $12 million in term deposit for like a 5% return? And it's an insane amount of money. And I was like, I don't understand how you can be a billionaire and have insane amount times infinity money and you go around destroying the world. Like, we really need to change people's perception that billionaires are good people and that they're not the ones hoarding all our resources to the point that people are starving. Like, I think that's where our focus needs to be. And I really need the people who are earning like 70K a year being journalists to do this because it's in their self-interest.
I think that's a good place to end. Mostly because we're coming up to time and not because we've covered everything that's happened this week. Because that would be a much longer podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for letting me rant.
That's been another current events episode for 1 of 200. Share, like, subscribe. I don't know if we've got anything planned for next midweek at the moment, but keep an eye out. Wherever you find this stuff, Twitter, maybe, or on our Patreon, for which there is a link in the summary. Hope everyone's doing okay out there. It has been a really tough beginning to the year. So keep at it, folks. Start organizing. Connect with your communities. And we'll catch you next time.
If artifices are then I'm living a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The words upon now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they criticize a cost me or to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day in this vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.